Hello, may I welcome you to episode 82 of Moving Matters. I am your host, Colin Wynne. I hope Moving Matters will give you an insight to others working or have worked in this wonderful industry as I delve into their past, their present and their future. You will find a new episode of Moving Matters on the second and fourth Thursday of each month. In this episode, we discuss how my guest has been full-time in the industry since the age of 21, learning his removal foundation skills from White & Co. initially and then GB Liners. Although as a second-generation remover, he helped out in the family business during school holidays. We discuss his challenges, what he would change from his moving past, his high points, what changes he would make to the industry, the advice he would give starting out again, his predictions for the next 5 years, and what he does outside of the workplace. And as always, we end Moving Matters with a funny moving story regarding an overnight in Hamburg, Germany. My guest this episode is James Cooper, director of Peter Cooper Limited. Enjoy. Good morning. This is a first for me because Lord Cooper, welcome to Moving Matters. How are you this morning?
Yeah, I am very well, thank you, Colin. Yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. So where did this Lord Cooper come from before we start?
I have no idea. I don't know whether it was Duncan Snerling, whether it was Grumpy Beveridge. I don't know where it came from. It's just one of those things that stuck. It's all lies. You know, there's no truth in there.
Oh, I don't know, guys. You should see the gold behind him on his mantelpiece. Anyway, James, welcome. Can you tell everybody about yourself and the length of time within the industry?
I am 47 years old. I am married to the gorgeous and very tolerant Kelly. We've got two kids. We've got a dog called Olive. As regards the length of time I've been in the industry, I suppose full time from the age of 21. So, yes, more years than I'd like to remember, to be fair.
Why only 21, if you don't mind me asking? Because you work in a family business.
Yes, and that's why I kind of said full time. So, I've grown into it. And school holidays and Christmases and days off, and when Dad was busy and he needed an extra pair of hands, the odd kind of sick day from school or college. But yeah, it's kind of ever since I was at school, I was helping out. And then when I was at college, in the times that I wasn't at college, I was helping out. Similarly, when I went to university, it was only in Southampton, still lived at home, so that when they were busy or again, when I wasn't at uni, I'd be in the business, I'd be working. So yeah, it's kind of, I suppose if you look at it that way, from the age of probably 12, 13, I've been in the industry, starting at the bottom and gradually working my way up.
So as you were shuffled off to university, what were you studying then? How to be a removal man?
Well, if they had a course on that, I'd have done it. No, not even begrudgingly. I didn't want to go to university. I'll be completely honest. All I wanted to do was work. And it was mum predominantly, dad less so. But mum said, no, you know, whilst we've got the business and you will probably end up here, I want you to have an education and I want you to have a degree to fall back on should you decide that you don't want to go down the route of coming into the family business, or if anything were to happen to the business, then there's a qualification to get you in the door of anywhere else. So yeah, it wasn't my choice to go to university. In fact, I put it off so long that we had to go through clearing in, I think, the August to actually get me a university place.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I went to Southampton Institute, as it was then, and studied marketing.
Interesting.
Well, yes and no, because I remember begrudgingly going to university on the first day, and one of the first things they said was, this course will obviously teach you how to market and so on and so forth, quickly followed by, if you get a job in marketing, forget everything you've learned over the next 3 years.
Really?
So I was kind of, why the hell am I here?
Yeah.
Anyway, I soldiered on. We got through it. We got a degree at the end of it. And I haven't really done anything with marketing ever since.
Interesting. Very interesting. So at 21, you come back into the family business. Did you?
No.
Oh.
No, at 21. So I always wanted to be in the business. And ever since I can remember, so probably from kind of 7 or 8, I was just fascinated with lorries.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to do was drive a truck.
Yeah.
And the old man had always said to me, if you still want to drive a truck at 21, I will put you through your HGV. And true to his word, he did. So, you know, at 17, I passed my car test and was driving the Luton vans and all the smaller vehicles. At 18, he took me out in a 7.5 tonner and kind of gave me a crash course in how to drive those. And at 21, he was true to his word. And yeah, I was doing my my HGV test at 21.
Wow.
Yeah, at 21, I went and got a job at White & Co. once my university had finished.
Oh, a close competitor.
Well, yes. Yeah. Because the other thing that my parents said, which at the time I hated the idea of, was we want you to go and work for other people because we are effectively self-taught and we don't know whether we're doing it right, wrong or indifferently.
Interesting.
And yeah, and by going out and working for other people, you get different views.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hated the idea of it. But yeah, I graduated from university and thought, okay, they want me to go and work elsewhere. What do I do? So I picked up the Daily Echo on a Thursday, because that was the jobs day, flipped through it, and saw this advert for White & Company out of their Winchester depot looking for an HGV driver. And I thought, bingo, two birds with one stone here. I'll go and drive for them. So I can't remember if I told them about the interview, but I went and had an interview up in Winchester and got offered the job. And I remember walking in one night and Mum and Dad were sat down having dinner, and I very proudly went, I've got myself a job. And they went, brilliant, what are you doing? And I said, I'm working for White & Co. out of Winchester. And they went, brilliant, what are you doing? And I went, I'm driving a truck. And Mum's face dropped. She was like, that's not really what we had planned. And I went, no, but it's a job in another removal company. And the old man just chuckled, held his hand out and shook my hand. And yeah, I went and worked for them for a while.
Wow. So how long were you there before you came to the family business?
I was there for a couple of years. And yeah, I was doing what drivers do, you know, predominantly European work.
All right.
And yeah, it was mainly the MOD start, the MOD contract. And I had to be fair, I had a great couple of years. It kind of got a bug out of my system of I needed to go and drive a truck. Because don't get me wrong, I still enjoy driving trucks now. I still jump at the chance to go and take a lorry up the road.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, I get that.
It's becoming harder to load and unload them, but you know, I still enjoy it. I still enjoy it. I can't argue that. So yeah, I did saw all parts of Europe and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was hard work and they work you very hard. But no, it was a good experience.
So when you came back to the family business, did you carry on then driving the trucks or were you given other roles to take over?
So when I was at White's, I was away for long periods of time and I'd done a long stint on a unit move from Munich to St. Anne's in Cornwall.
Right.
And I think it was about 12 or 13 weeks I was away, and that was kind of the moment of I'm bored of this now, you know, I'm bored of living in a lorry.
Yeah.
So I forget how I came across it, but I was again flicking through job adverts and I saw an advert for GB Liners
Oof.
As a graduate trainee. And I thought, well, I've got removals experience, tick. I've got a degree, tick. Let's stick an application in. And yeah, I went and had an interview in London with Jeremy Loney, one of the directors. And then I had a second interview in Cheltenham with Mr. B. That was the longest hour of my life. Yeah, I walked out there and thought, well, there's absolutely no chance I've got that job.
Really?
Yeah.
And did you get it?
I did. I did get it, yes.
Good man.
You know what Rob's like. He'll ask you a question and then halfway through answering that question, he fires you another one. Yeah, it was... And I'd had one previous interview, you know, so I wasn't, it's not as if I was used to that sort of environment. But yes, he decided that I was worthy of a job.
Wow.
So I went and worked for Rob for, I think it was 3 or 4 years. I can't exactly remember. But yeah, we worked all over the country, kind of started off in Cheltenham. Then went up to Leeds to run the diary in Leeds. Then ran the diary for Leeds and Manchester. And then I moved back to Bristol to run the diary in Bristol. And then ended up as branch manager in Cheltenham.
So White & Co?
Yeah.
TB Liners?
Yeah.
I take it the next one's Pickford's.
Oh, you can't mention that. Can't mention the P word. No, it was at the time when I was in Cheltenham that Dad's health started to deteriorate. So his blood pressure was going up. He wasn't getting any younger. And the game plan all along was to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just seemed the right time because things were getting stressful for Dad. And, you know, when you hear that your parents they weren't ill, don't get me wrong. But yeah, you want to help out as much as possible. So
yeah,
the time was right for me to come back.
So two good companies to earn your stars as such in the industry. One, you go out there, you're doing European work, you're loading and unloading trucks. And the other one, you're learning the managerial side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I couldn't have asked for a better company to learn that from than GB's.
Really?
The depth and the lengths that Rob and all the others go to instill that. I had the, I suppose I had the experience of being on the vans and knowing the industry, but the office side of it, I you know, it wasn't something that interested me. I didn't know how to estimate. I didn't know how to run a diary. I'd never learned any of those things. And yeah, Rob kind of teaches that. And yeah, he did a bloody good job.
Well, clearly it's worked, as you now have the Lord title. So you did something right, and so did Mr. Bartok with you.
Yes, yeah, the Lord title. Maybe I ought to get a lordship. Can you buy them?
I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can. So can you tell everybody about your company and the services it offers and also how it started? Your folks started it, didn't they?
They did. They did indeed. So they set it up in 1986. There's two facets to the company. You've kind of got the removals, the storage, the shipping. So we do domestic, we do international, we do deep sea. We've got a 14,000 square foot warehouse. We do secure shredding. We used to do document storage, but not so much these days. I think the big boys tend to have swept that up. And I think that market is a dying market.
Well, it's all going digital now, isn't it?
Exactly that. So yeah, that's one element of the company. The second element is the antique and furniture restoration and repair side of it.
Yeah.
Dad, when he was growing up, was trained as an antique restorer.
Ah.
So that was a skill that he always had. And I suppose it's a more relaxed side to the business.
It's more of a passion, more of a hobby. And we've got three antique restorers. And we can kind of do anything furniture-based. We do upholstery, clockworks, you know, anything to do with furniture. We can repair, we can renovate, we can build bespoke pieces. So, yeah, it's kind of a separate entity, but they kind of run hand in hand.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, they set it up in 1986, and it's grown steadily.
So did your dad set the company up to do removals and the restoration, or did he set it up to do one first before the other?
So before he set it up in 86, he worked for a company called Caulfields of Lymington. And they were, back in the day, they would buy and sell antiques. And right. They had an antique restoration side that would restore the antiques that they bought. But they also worked with the public so that if Joe Bloggs down the road needed something doing, they could be charged accordingly and it would be done. The removal side came about because there was a very large house in Pennington, and the woman came up to Dad and said, "Hey, I need to move." And he was like, "Brilliant. What do you want me to do about it?" and she said, "Well, I want you to move me." And he said, "Well, not being funny, but we're not a removal company. We're an antique restoration company." And she said, "Yeah, but singularly, you've moved probably 75% of my house." Right. She said, "I just want you to do it collectively."
Yeah.
So he thought about it for a little while and thought, well, she's got a point. Let's give it a go. And that's how the removal side of Caulfields came about. And he was kind of pivotal in the introduction of it and the learning of it and how you go about doing it. So when he left Caulfields, it was just kind of a natural progression to continue the removal side as well as an antique restoration side.
Cool.
And, yeah, set up in competition with them, effectively.
Wow. So how many trucks do you run then, James, and how many crews do you have?
We have 12 full-time employees on the removals. We've got three in the restoration department. We've got three ladies in the office answering the phones. Then you've got mum, myself, my wife, who kind of, as with any business kind of owners, kind of just put various different hats on depending on what kind of day it is. And
part-time?
Hey?
Part-time?
I'd love to be part-time. And then, yeah, the fleet consists of, what have we got? We've got three and a half tonners, two 7.5 tonners, a 12 tonner, four 18 tonners, and a wagon and drag at 36 ton.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
You kind of got to have a varied fleet.
Yeah.
Because the area that we work in down here on the south coast, we're in the middle of the New Forest. So you need a lot of the smaller vehicles for access, and yet you need the bigger ones for the good access in the towns, but also for the distance.
Do you use the wagon and drag for European, or do you use it for UK?
Both.
Right.
Both. I bought a wagon and drag from, ironically, from GB Liners must be 6 or 7 years ago now. And I bought it really as an experiment to see whether it could work in the area that we work in.
Yeah.
And it can. It's surprising the places it will go. I am very lucky in the guy that drives it is always up for a challenge. So I'll often send him, you know, an address, say, go and check this. Will you get the trailer there? And 9 times out of 10, he will. So. Yeah. Yeah, it's flexible. It's not out all the time. You know, it will sit in the yard for 2-3 weeks, and then it'll be out for 2-3 weeks. But, you know, it's handy having it there.
So what challenges have you had to overcome then, James?
I suppose in the early days, being the boss's son was always a challenge. You kind of got a... And I think where I went and worked for other people helped overcome this. You need to be able to prove that you're there because you're worthy of being there rather than because you've been given that job.
Yeah.
And I think Dad was always very much, you start at the bottom and you will work the longest hours, you will get the worst jobs, you will prove yourself to everyone else. And I'd like to think I did that. Mm. You know, I would never ask the guys to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I think that was probably the first challenge. And I know it's been mentioned before, but I think COVID was probably the biggest challenge that we as a company had to overcome. And there was no rule book for it. It was kind of, you know, you were winging it from day to day, hoping that you were making the right decision. And nobody knew what was around the corner. So I think we got it right. I wouldn't probably change much of how we dealt with it. But yeah, it was challenging. It really, really was. Yeah, there were days when you just dread the phone ringing. I think we got through the initial stages fine, but there was a week in January when everyone had COVID. It was literally just one after the other, after the other, after the other. And you're looking at the diary thinking, okay, well, you know, the first one, we can swap this bubble. We've planned for this eventuality. And then the second phone call comes in and you think, okay, well, things are getting a bit tight now, but we can get through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it reached the stage where I think we had, out of everyone here, four of us were still able to work. And yeah, we were doing some stupid hours. I couldn't have got through it without help from a couple of local companies who managed to either take a job off me or provide me with staff. And yeah, it was horrible. And I would not want to repeat that again, because you're in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I cannot phone this customer up and say, sorry, we can't move you.
No.
You know, you've always got to come up with, how can we get around it?
And you make an interesting point, because I do think as well, COVID was a time where the industry did come together and help each other out.
Definitely.
It's one of those industries anyway, but they really did come together during COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you only really, you know that who your friends are in the industry.
Yeah.
But it was at times like that yeah, you phone up and you'd say help. And if people could help, you knew that they would. You know, and likewise, we've repaid the favours for other people who have been in a similar situation. And I think it's only until you're in that situation of your staff dropping like flies, do you appreciate the stresses and strains it puts on people.
Yeah,
so when you know you can help, you do.
Yeah, absolutely. If you could change anything from your moving past, what would it be?
If I could change anything, I would. The one thing I always wanted, so our warehouse is leased. We haven't bought it. We don't own it. And when I came back, that was always the goal, is that we would get a warehouse. The problem we've got is that the area in which we work, there isn't much land for development. And there isn't many buildings that are suitable. And on the industrial estate that we are currently on, a piece of land came up. And we could have bought it, and we looked into it. But with the build cost and the land cost, the figures were just going astronomically. But what I think, my one regret is that I should have scaled back on what we wanted out of the building.
Right.
Because I would have loved to have seen Dad's face with a new warehouse that we owned.
Right.
And I think I probably held out to try and get what in an ideal world we wanted, when I should have looked at it more pragmatically and thought, well, okay, what can we get for the money? What can we produce for the money? And yeah, that's probably the one thing that I do regret. you know, and we're still looking now and we're still keeping feelers out, but we're in the national park and, you know, the cost of land is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a shame that never happened. I have there is still some more land up here, so it's not dead in the water, but we'll just have to see what's around the corner.
Yeah. What is your high point of being within the industry, James?
I suppose I see every day that when the guys come back in good time with a clean job ticket, they're happy, the client's happy, everything's gone as planned. To me, that's a high point. When I leave the office at 6:30, whatever it is, if all the trucks are back in the yard and everyone's gone home, it's a good day. You know, I haven't achieved things really in the industry other than just the everyday. So yeah, when you buy yourself a new lorry and you put that on the road, that's an achievement.
Yeah.
When the guys are back, when they're happy, when you get emails or phone calls from clients, they are all achievements. So yeah, I think that's what I would see as a high point. You know, if everyone's good, then life is good.
And of course, there's the Lord title. So what one thing would you change within the moving industry?
People's perception of what our industry is about.
Hooray.
Yeah, I think I'm sure I'm not the first to mention it.
Nope.
But yeah, I think people all too often see it as, well, it's going into a house, picking up a box and moving it. And in some respects, they are correct. You know, that is part of the job. But yeah, I think people need to be educated that the job is a skilled job. You need...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you need a skill set to do it. You need good people. You need good equipment. Yeah, and really that's what we try and do when we step foot into every single client that invites us to quote, is you try and educate that, yeah, it's you pay what you get. And it's worth paying a little bit more if you are going to get a little bit more.
Certainly at a stressful time of life as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, the guys are psychologists as much as removal men. You know, they need to know when the client needs a chat, when the client needs to be left alone, when the client's hand needs holding. And, you know, so their job is twice as hard because they've got to try and form a bond and a relationship with a client that they might be working with for 5, 6, 7 days.
Yeah.
They need to get on with their job and do what they're trained to do, and all do it with a smile on a face.
I must admit, that's one thing I never realised about this industry until I started doing these podcasts, is just how much of a good Samaritan at the end of the day the remover has to be with the client.
Yeah.
He has to put his arm around the client. He has to reassure them that everything's going to be all right.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. You know, the guys need to almost say, you know, if they can see that the client is stressed, they almost need to say, look, stick the kettle on, let's have a cup of tea, let's just calm down. You need to be able to talk, you need to be able to communicate. You need to have a level of amusement within the job, just so that it kind of puts... Because if the client's relaxed, then everything is good. It's you don't want a stressed client, because that just stresses everyone. You know, everyone's walking on eggshells. You know, those that relax, stick the kettle on, have a laugh, have a joke, but let the guys get on with it, they seem to cope with the moving process far better than those that are far more stressed.
Definitely. Oh, we need to change that perception. We really, really do.
Yeah.
How can we do that on a national scale, though? That's the thing.
It's nigh on impossible. Unless all removal companies sing from the same hymn sheet and kind of on the quote stage try and push that, you know, you are paying for this service, and kind of break it down into, yes, we lift and we shift, but we do X, Y, and Z in addition. But yeah, it's, I don't know. If you could come up with the answer of it, let us know, will you?
Definitely. But it's not just lift and shift, is it? It's lift and shift with your worldly possessions that you that you've built up over the last 10, 20, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, exactly that. The amount of people that, when I go and do a survey and you go around every single room and you open every single cupboard and you ask them questions, the amount of people that say, oh, actually, I didn't realise I had this much stuff.
Yeah.
Because you never actually walk around each room in your house looking at what needs to be moved. So I think, yeah, it's people take things for granted.
And we are a nation of hoarders.
Oh, God, yeah. Without a doubt. What do you think? When I first started, say when I was kind of 15, 16, the mainstay of every removal company was the trusty 7.5 tonner.
Yeah.
And if you were packing the job, you'd go in the day before. And if not, you just load and deliver it in a day. And that was the mainstay. You might have one large 16, 17 ton at the time for the bigger moves. Whereas nowadays, you know, the mainstay of most fleets is the 18 tonner. And most jobs are over 2, 3, 4 days.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah. People do own more. Whether they hoard, I don't know, it depends on the size of your property, you know, but yeah, people have got more stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So what advice would you give yourself just starting out within the industry again?
You can never have too many friends. That is the one thing that I have learned. And I'd like to think I got a lot of friends. So if I need help, if I need advice, if I need a question answered, there's always someone at the end of a phone that will answer it. And similarly, I'd like to think that if people wanted to come to me for advice, they could do. But yeah, I think you can never have too many contacts in this industry. And listen to people. Because whilst they might have different views, it doesn't mean that your view is right and their view is wrong. But no, just friends, advice, and ask questions. If you don't know, ask a question. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
So how many times do you phone Mr. Appleyard for advice?
Depends how long I've got. If I've only got 10 minutes, there's no way I'm phoning him. If I've got an hour free, then yeah, I'll give him a call.
Sorry, David.
I'm not.
Where do you see yourself in the industry in the next 5 years? Let's start with yourself. Hopefully, your own warehouse.
Hopefully, it would be nice. I think in the next 5 years, I will still be doing exactly what I'm doing now. I don't see that. I mean, the market in which we work, which is predominantly the domestic market, I can't see changing. It's gonna have the peaks and troughs. I think you can see the normal trends emerging back after the COVID bubble. So yeah, we will probably be doing exactly what we're doing now and probably complaining about all the things that we normally complain about on a yearly basis. And I'd like to think I take more holidays in 5 years' time.
Oh, that's pushing it a bit, isn't it?
Wow. I've got one booked for this year.
I know, you've invited us all. Maybe I should let everybody know where we're all going.
Absolutely. Have you booked your tickets yet?
David's paid for mine.
But no, I think that would be one thing that I would like is to be able to have a second holiday a year. But no, I think it's which we're still going to be here, we're still going to be enjoying it, and the market won't change. It will, like I say, have its peaks and its troughs, but I don't think it will change in any way.
Do you see many companies closing over the next 5 years? Because obviously there was a boom during COVID, wasn't it? We had the housing market and everybody's got a van, can move somebody, and that van turned into three vans and three vans turned into five, and then they got a truck, and then the boom is over and now they're sitting there thinking, oh.
I think the quality movers will probably remain. I think we've already seen those kind of man and vans that started up because of the boom. I think we've seen a lot of them already disappear and try and find their fortunes in another industry. I don't know whether the big boys, the White & Co's, the Bishops, the GB Liners will suffer from less of the corporate market moving. I don't know. But I think if you are financially stable, if you've got a brain in your head, if you don't spend all the money that you make, I think you will still continue to survive and prosper. I think if you provide a good service, then you will always do well.
Yeah. We'll have to watch this space. We can judge the market on how many trucks Alan Beveridge buys to refurb.
Yes. I don't know how many he's got. Other than his projects, I don't know how many of the working trucks that he's got.
Work? What is this thing you could call work with him?
Yes. Yeah. He mentions it occasionally, doesn't he?
In passing.
I love Alan Beveridge to bits. But the more excited he gets, the quicker he talks, the harder it is to understand him. I had a night away up there a couple of years ago, and he was showing me round, and then we got to his spray booth and he got all excited. And I'm like, Alan, talk English. What are you saying?
This is for the trucks and not for himself now, is it? Let's just get this straight for the audience. Oh, dear. Back on track. So what do you do outside of the industry to switch off, James?
I have a very long to-do list composed by Mrs. C. She, so 5 years ago, we moved house and we bought, I wouldn't describe it as a wreck because structurally it was nice, but it hadn't been touched in 40 years. Right. So everything needs doing to it. And we're gradually working our way through it. But I've done a lot of it myself.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of room after room. We've knocked rooms together and redone double glazing. And, you know, it's amazing what you can learn off YouTube, really.
See, those influencers and that, those YouTubers, they are worth their weight in gold at times.
Well, Mrs. C normally starts with the words, I've been thinking. And that means, oh God, a massive great project is coming. We kind of got quotes for fitting double glazing and double glazed doors. And we looked at it and we thought, can't afford that. How can we reduce this down? So we typed into Google, how do you fit double glazed windows? And thought, it can't be that hard, can it? So, you know, it's amazing what you can learn on there. So we've been doing brickwork, we've been doing windows. I don't touch electrics, but fortunately my son-in-law is an electrician, so we don't have to worry too much about that. Plastering. I'd love to learn how to plaster. that's one trade I would love to learn. But yeah, the house keeps us busy. I enjoy it. It's escapism, really is. In lockdown, we furloughed everyone. And for 6 weeks, I'd call into work. We were still maintaining the truck, so I'd run them down to the garage for inspection. But on the whole, it was 6 weeks at home. And we got through an awful lot of work at home.
Yeah.
Which kept me sane. And it was nice because we had, you know, we had stuff to do and we did it as a family. I suppose our house, the bottom, probably the bottom 80 feet of the garden, was an allotment. The previous owner had it as an allotment. So it was domed in the middle and you had a meter's worth of concrete path all the way around it.
And we said all along, you know, we're going to level it out. We're going to get rid of the concrete. But at the time, I'd work on a Saturday morning. So that would give Saturday afternoon and Sundays. And we knew that that would just take months. And so lockdown came and we thought, we might have an opportunity to do the garden. So I contacted a good friend of mine who runs a farm locally and said, Dave, you don't need some hardcore, do you? He said, well, actually, yeah. He said, I could do with some. Drop me a farm trailer around. I'll give you some hardcore. So, he dropped a farm trailer around. And then it must have taken 2 or 3 days. And we eventually managed to extract about 12 ton of concrete.
Oof.
All done by hand. All broken up by hand. All wheelbarrowed into the back of a farm trailer by hand. But, yeah, it got a massive job done. It kept us busy. It kept us sane.
And a huge sense of achievement at the end of it.
Massive sense of achievement.
Yeah.
Massive. It's only really when you look back through the photos of what it was like before and what it's like now.
Mm.
And then you think, God, yeah, we did that. Ironically, we did it just as the weather turned. And it was just one of the hottest times. And yeah, it was, but it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It really was. So yeah, DIY. Up until, I suppose, last year, I'd still be playing football once a week. I've always been a big football fan. Always played a relatively good standard of football. I think age and weight and all the things that go against you the older you get made it harder and harder. And we used to play on a Wednesday night. And it was one of those things. We'd done it for 15 years. It just kind of dissolved and so if anyone wants an overweight bloke that occasionally runs around to play football on an evening, I'm your man.
So based where you are you a Southampton or Bournemouth fan?
I'm a Southampton fan.
Thought so.
I was a schoolboy for them when I was 15. So it was back in the days when Laurie McMenemy was the first team manager.
Yeah.
So, Southampton was always my first club. My granddad on my mum's side took me to my first Southampton game because he was a season ticket holder. So he took me to my first game when I was probably 9 or 10. Yeah, and it's always been an affiliation with Southampton. So yeah, Bournemouth is good. It's nice to see them, but no, Southampton through and through.
Well, hopefully Southampton will be back in the Premier League for next season.
Well, to be fair, it's quite nice actually watching them win some games. So I don't mind them being in the Championship because, you know, at least they're at the top half of the league rather than, you know, relegation battling.
Yeah, I get that. And finally, I like to end my podcast with a funny moving story. Do you have one or more to tell? And by the smirk on your face, I would say yes.
This was the one question that I was really, really struggling with. And I'm sure there's been lots of stories, but I just can't think of them. So I think I was listening to Dan Braddock's podcast that you did with him. And he came up with a story about a drunk weekend in Germany, I think.
I think, yeah.
Which got me thinking. I thought, that reminds me of something. So back in the White & Co days, we were obviously away all the time. And we tipped a job in Denmark on the Friday and we had to reload, I think, Celle in Germany on the Monday. So we were kind of heading south thinking, right, well, where are we going to park? And the guy I was with went, well, I've parked in Hamburg before. Okay, let's head for Hamburg. And I said to him, I suppose you can remember where you parked. He said, it was round by the fish market somewhere. Okay, fair enough. Head for the fish market. So we get in there. I suppose it was 2-3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. We find the fish market. And basically the fish market is off a road. And there was kind of parking at the side of this road. So I kind of reversed in, so I was 90 degrees to the road, thought, brilliant, we're good, get changed, straight into Hamburg. So we were in Hamburg for quite a few hours. And I remember bits of the night. There was a great Irish bar there. We frequented that a fair bit. And we must have got back to the truck, I don't know, 2-3 in the morning, something like that. I can't really remember. And get back to the truck, kind of the obligatory night, straight into bed. That's it. That's all I remember. Wake up the following morning, rubbing your head, thinking, oof, yeah, that was painful last night. And I pull the curtains back, and I just remember thinking, what's going on? When I parked, I was at right angles to this road, and I'm now looking at it from like a 45-degree angle. So I'm thinking, okay, try and remember. And I'm thinking, I have no idea what's going on here. So I pull the curtains fully back to be greeted by what can only be described as thousands of people and thousands of stalls all selling fish. So at this point, the hatch slides back and the porter sticks his head down. And I went, what happened last night? He went, what do you mean? And I went, the truck's moved. He went, oh. He said, about 10 minutes after we went to bed, he said, there was a tap on the door. I said, what's there? He said, yeah. He said, followed by a louder tap on the door, followed by someone battering the door. I'm like, I don't remember any of this. He said, no. He said, I jumped down. He said, I tried to wake you. He said, I thought you died. You just didn't wake. He said, I had to move the truck. I went, what? So you started the truck and you moved? He said, yeah, he didn't wake up once. And we were literally surrounded by people selling fish because where I'd parked it was the gate. It was immediately in front of the gate of the main entrance. So he had to then move it, and he tried to move it kind of 10 feet to the right, and he ended up, the back was 10 feet to the right, the front was like 30 feet to the right. Yeah, so we got up, slightly hungover, got the deck chairs out, put the kettle on, and looked a little bit sheepish while everyone stared at us why this blooming great lorry was disrupting their market.
Oh, brilliant. I love it. I do love these stories. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Well, James, thank you very much for giving up your time this morning to record an episode of Moving Matters with me.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a long time in the coming, but we got there in the end.
We got there in the end, most definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I sincerely hope you enjoyed episode 82 of Moving Matters. Please rate, review and subscribe in your favourite podcast player of choice, and please tell your industry colleagues about Moving Matters. My thanks and appreciation go to James Cooper of Peter Cooper Limited for giving up his time to record this episode. Thank you again, James. If you would like to know more about Peter Cooper Limited and the services they provide, then you will find links are in the show notes for this episode and on our webpage, movingmatterspodcast.co.uk. And please, if you have a funny moving story that could be relayed to our listeners, or you would like to be a guest on the podcast, then do reach out to me by completing the contact form on our webpage, movingmatterspodcast.co.uk. Well, that is all from me, so until next time, keep moving.